Lecture 26, The Causes of the Peloponnesian War.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. The Peloponnesian War of 431 to 404 BC was fought between Athens and its allies in the Delian League and the Peloponnesian League headed by Sparta. It was pretty obvious that the 30 years peace of 445, that's the one that ended the first Peloponnesian War, was never going to last. And it wasn't going to last because neither side really respected its terms. Athens, for example, held on to the island of Aegina like grim death. Moreover, the Athenians added a further long wall called the Middle Wall after the peace was signed. Now, this move would have been pointless and a waste of money unless they saw the peace as ephemeral. So the Spartans continued to feel threatened by Athens as an imperial power, and the Athenians kept on expanding their empire. It's no surprise then that both sides went to war again in 431. This war, which is commonly called the Peloponnesian War, though I suppose technically you could say it's the Second Peloponnesian War, this one lasted until 404, as I said, so almost 30 years. Now, Thucydides gives us two reasons for its outbreak. He gives what he calls the truest explanation. It's a direct translation of the Greek, the truest explanation. And then he gives us what he calls the immediate causes, the immediate causes. In other words, what was the ultimate reason for warfare? What we might call the truest explanation. And then why the war broke out when it did, the immediate causes. So what made war happen? The truest explanation. And why did it happen to break out when it did in 431? The immediate causes. Thucydides tells us that the truest explanation was Athens's growth as an imperial power and Sparta's fear of that growth. For Thucydides, then, war was inevitable. And the only question was, when would it break out again? We can ask whether Thucydides was right with his truest explanation, but I happen to think he is. For one thing, we know enough about the aspirations of Athens and of Sparta to recognize that the Greek mainland wasn't big enough for the both of them, or at least not big enough for the both of them as leaders of leagues that were in contest with each other. Also in support of Thucydides' view is that the Athenians continued to build fortifications after the 30 years' peace, as I mentioned a moment ago. At some point then, Athens and Sparta would go to war. But the big question was, what year would this be? Well, this gets us to Thucydides' immediate causes for the war. That is, the reason why it broke out when it did in 431. And Thucydides gives us three events. They involve Athens within Corcyra, Potidaea, and Megara. And Athenian involvement in these three places, Corcyra, Potidaea, and Megara, led to conflict with Corinth, Sparta's main ally in the Peloponnesian League, and as a result, Sparta ended up declaring war on Athens. In this lecture, we're going to examine the immediate causes in some detail. But an introductory word before we do. It was important that neither side, neither Athens or Sparta, should be seen as breaking that 30 years peace, specifically those two terms. One that stipulated that neither Athens or Sparta was to interfere with each other's allies, and second, that no allies were allowed to transfer from one league to another. With these factors in mind, we move to the causes of the Peloponnesian War. Because the line I'm going to pitch to you is that Pericles engineered the war while taking care that Athens wasn't seen as breaking the peace. So there was a lot of maneuvering going on behind the scenes to back Sparta into a corner. Why would he back Sparta into a corner? Because then the Spartans were making war on Athens. Athens would appear the victim. It was Athens that wasn't breaking the 30 years peace, but Sparta was. Now this view, my view about Pericles, is a heretical one, I know, and goodness knows you've met enough heresies of mine already, and we'll meet a lot more. But I should be up front with you right now and confess I don't like Pericles. So any chance I get to criticize him, I'm going to take it. There, how's that for objectivity? But if you think that Pericles didn't engineer the outbreak of the war, if you think that it broke out because of the snowball effect of these three immediate causes, that's fine. I don't mind. You may well be right. But I'm going to stick to my guns on this issue. To begin with, Corcyra, our first immediate cause. In 435, the island of Corcyra, which was off the eastern coast of Illyria, actually Corcyra is the modern Corfu, Corcyra and its colony Epidamnus became locked in a dispute. A civil war broke out in Epidamnus, and when the democrats in Epidamnus appealed for help to Corcyra, their mother city, they were turned down. So these democrats invoked the help of Corinth, which was the mother city of Corcyra. So if you like, Epidamnus is the granddaughter, shall we say, of Corinth. Now, clashes between Corinth and Corcyra made the Corcyreans realize that they needed help. Corinth was big and strong. It also had a formidable navy. The Corcyreans had a very strong navy too, but they couldn't match that of Corinth. So Corcyra could hardly turn for help to any other member of the Peloponnesian League because Corinth was the strongest member of that league behind Sparta. So that meant the Corcyreans could turn only to Athens. The Athenians held an assembly about what to do. Should we accept the Corcyrean plea for assistance, which would have meant allying with Corcyra? But would that not have meant breaking the 30 years peace, because the Athenians would then have been moving against Corinth? And one of the terms of the 30 years peace was that one side should not move against the allies of the other. Pericles steps in here, and he guided the assembly towards making a defensive alliance. Athens would come to Corcyra's aid only if attacked. And so this was not going against an ally of Sparta. The justification for it was Corcyra's location on the trade route to the west. So in other words, if Corinth hadn't sailed against Corcyra, then the Athenians would not have become embroiled with Corinth. So hence the defensive alliance. Well, not a surprise, Corinth did indeed send a fleet against Corcyra, and the Athenians supported their new ally. In a naval engagement in 433, a Peloponnesian fleet, one that included 90 Corinthian ships, was virtually annihilated by the Athenian navy. In fact, it would take Corinth some years to rebuild its naval strength. Now, hardly surprising, this strained relations between Athens and Corinth dramatically. But things got worse in 433 when Athens switched its attention to northern Greece, to the Corinthian colony of Potidaea in the Chalcidice. And so we move to our second immediate cause that involves Potidaea. Now, although colonies were independent of their mother cities, Potidaea was the exception that proved the rule. For some reason, Potidaea always received its annual magistrates from Corinth. Now, Potidaea was a member of the Delian League, and so the Athenians ordered it not to receive any more magistrates from Corinth. They also ordered the Potidaeans to dismantle their fortifications and to hand over hostages. And they justified these demands on the grounds of needing to protect Athenian interest in the region. Let's just remember, one of the clauses of the 30 years peace was that a hegemon could move against his ally and use force if necessary. So the Athenians were justified to use this type of force towards the Potidaeans. They hadn't broken any terms of the 30 years peace. Potidaea was indeed a town of great strategic importance. It was close to the rich timber deposits of the region, which the Athenians badly needed for their ships. Moreover, the Macedonian king Perdiccas was fickle in his loyalty to Athens. And Potidaea also had this intimate connection with Corinth because it received its magistrates from there. And the Corinthians, of course, were no friends of the Athenians. So Pericles suggested to the people, to the Athenians, that Perdiccas of Macedonia, the Corinthians, and the Potidaeans could potentially unite. And if they did, then this triple alliance would threaten Athenian interests in that area. Hence, Athens had to act. Now, it's hardly a surprise that when the Potidaeans received these demands from Athens, they refused to comply. They weren't going to raise their fortifications because that would have left them completely vulnerable to outside attack. So they resisted. And as a result, the Athenians sent an army north to besiege Potidaea. Perdiccas of Macedonia and Corinth lent help, and the Athenians and the Corinthians faced off each other in battle in 432, the Battle of Potidaea. And Corinth lost. So like Corcyra, Potidaea plays a role in the outbreak of the Peloponnesian War because the Corinthians get defeated. And who do you think the Corinthians start complaining to about what the Athenians are doing? Sparta. But at this stage, Sparta seems indifferent to their complaints. Despite the influence of Corinth and the Peloponnesian League, and especially its naval power, the Spartans are, for the moment, ignoring the Corinthian moans and groans. Then we have the third and final immediate cause, also in 432, same year as the Battle of Potidaea. And this third cause was really the straw that broke the camel's back, according to the likes of Thucydides and other contemporary writers, in particular the comic playwright Aristophanes. In 432, Pericles issued a decree against Megara on the western border of Attica, and this decree banned the Megarians from trading with Athens, and it banned them also from using the ports of the Athenian Empire, these ports to export and sell their goods. The justification for what modern scholars have come to call the Megarian decree was that Megara had supported Corinth back in 433, back when the Athenians were clashing with the Corinthians over Corcyra and then Potidaea. Apparently also, Megara was giving refuge to some escaped slaves from Athens. Now, given Megara's strategic location on Attica's west border, it was felt, and quite rightly, I agree, that a hostile Megara would pose a security threat to Athens. What if the Corinthians marched into Attica? They're a bit of the wild card by now. Megara would provide a Corinthian army with ease of access into Attica. And since relations between Corinth and Athens were worsening anyway, thanks to the Corcyra and Potidaea incidents, the Athenians could well face hostilities from Corinth. And so they felt they did have to protect themselves. This was the line that Pericles peddled to them. These economic sanctions, that's the Megarian decree, these economic sanctions on Megara spelled economic ruin for the Megarians. They were entirely dependent on trade for their livelihood. All of a sudden, not to be allowed to use the hundreds of ports belonging to allies in the Delian League, and especially that of Athens, well, this would be like closing off the whole of Asia to the USA today. Needless to say, the Megarians protested to Athens and Sparta, because everyone knew that Pericles' hidden agenda here was to force Megara back into the Delian League. Remember, Megara had been a member of the Delian League until it switched allegiance to the Peloponnesian League in the 460s. It was one of the reasons why Athens and Sparta went to war. Now, the Megarian decree finally brought the Spartans into the situation. As I mentioned before, the Spartans were pretty much indifferent to the woes of their allies. They really didn't care about them because they weren't being affected by what Athens was doing to Corcyra or Potidaea. But Corinth and Megara were influential members of the Peloponnesian League. Both were very strategically located on the route from the Peloponnese into Attica. And Corinth had the strongest navy on the mainland after Athens. Since the Spartans were not yet a naval power, they'll become one, but not yet, the Spartans were reliant on the navies of their allies. So when Corinth and Megara began to make noises about leaving the Peloponnesian League because of the Spartans' unsympathetic attitude to them, well, matters came to a head. This was the last thing that the Spartans could allow to happen. In other words, the last thing that the Spartans wanted was Megara and Corinth leaving the Peloponnesian League. The League would have been severely weakened, and even if Corinth and Megara didn't join the Delian League, even if they stayed independent, they would be no friends of the Spartans given the circumstances of their departure from the Peloponnesian League. This means that they might allow an Athenian army to pass unhindered into the Peloponnese, and they might well obstruct a Spartan army trying to get into Attica. That would be the reverse of the current situation. And so, in the summer of 432, we have two debates that take part in the Spartan Appella, the Spartan Assembly. In the first debate, speeches were put to the Spartans by the Corinthians, by the Megarians, and even by some Aeginetans. And these embassies from these places were putting pressure on Sparta to declare war. War on Athens. The Spartans also heard from the Athenians. There was evidently an Athenian embassy in Sparta at the same time. There's a coincidence. And the Athenians were giving the reasons for their actions, the actions that I've just been outlining, actions supporting Corcyra against Potidaea and the Megarian decree. Now, technically, no one could accuse the Athenians of breaking the 30 years' peace. But nevertheless, the Spartans decided to issue an ultimatum to Athens. And this ultimatum was rescind the Megarian decree or else. And by or else, we mean that Sparta would declare war on Athens on behalf of its allies. Notice the role that the Spartan allies are playing in all of this. Athens hasn't attacked Sparta that would absolutely smash the 30 years' peace. But what the Athenians are doing, or rather Pericles is doing, is attacking Sparta, but covertly via its allies. Well, in Athens, the assembly met. The assembly debated the Spartan ultimatum. Pericles delivered a powerful speech, which is given to us in Thucydides' History of the War. In this speech, Pericles argued that for the safety of Athens and for its democratic system, for the lifestyle indeed that the people had got used to, the Spartan ultimatum had to be rejected. Otherwise, everything that the Athenians were used to would be no more. They and their society would be attacked, would be wiped out. I'm glad this sort of scare tactic exploitation of another state's military capabilities, what, like having WMD or nuclear reactors, and this patriotic rhetoric to fight for a way of life and democracy, I'm glad these things don't happen anymore. The Athenians voted in Pericles' favor. Not a surprise. He was an accomplished orator. And also, what's the normal reaction to an ultimatum? You want to resist it. A second assembly then met in Sparta to discuss the Athenian rejection. It's obviously an Athenian embassy had to go to Sparta, taking with it news of the assembly's rejection. Now, at this second meeting of the Apella, the Spartan assembly, despite a speech by the Spartan king Archidamus against war, the ephor, Sithenelaidas, carried the day. Despite Archidamus saying that the war was going to be costly, that the current sons of the Spartans would inherit it because it would go on for that long, and he turned out to be right, nevertheless, Sithenelaidas was able to persuade the Spartans that the Athenians had broken the 30 years' peace. And as a result, the Spartans declared war on the Athenians. They planned to invade Attica in the following spring of 431 at the start of the campaigning season. And so the Peloponnesian War has begun. Now, I'd like to ask some questions about these immediate causes, as Thucydides gives them to us, and then I'd like to try to work out who was responsible for the declaration of war. Well, I know I've already given you my answer, but now you'll get to see some of my thinking. Although the Spartans were the technical aggressors in the Peloponnesian War, because after all, they were the ones who formally declared it, the question is whether they were forced to do so by Pericles, who used key Spartan allies as pawns. The three immediate causes, Corcyra, Potidaea, Megara, can be plausibly explained as Athens acting in its own economic and security best interests, and we've mentioned these in the last few minutes. So, the alliance with Corcyra gained Athens a valuable ally on the trade route to the west, economic. It's important to note that the alliance that Athens made with Corcyra was defensive only. It wasn't offensive and defensive. In other words, Athens would come to Corcyra's aid only if it were attacked. If Corinth didn't do anything, then there would have been no hostilities between Athens and Corinth. This defensive alliance, then, didn't break the terms of the 30 years' peace. What about the moves against Potidaea and Megara for security reasons? Well, as we said, Potidaea was really close to these timber supplies that the Athenians needed. And a union of Perdiccas of Macedonia, Corinth and Potidaea would be problematic for Athens in that area. No question about that. Potidaea was fortified, and so it would become a serious stronghold if this triple alliance came about. Having Potidaea dismantle its fortifications made some sense then, and Corinth was a bit of a wild card by now. The same goes for the Megarian decree, given Megara's location. Any army from the Peloponnese would have an easy access route into Attica. In none of Athens' actions was it acting against Sparta itself. In none of its actions was it breaking the terms of the 30 years' peace. However, the other side of the coin is that Pericles was exploiting key Spartan allies to force the Spartans to action, as I said before. If Thucydides saw that war between Sparta and Athens was inevitable because of the growth of Athens' power, something that showed no signs of abating, then so did a statesman of Pericles' caliber. Oh, I don't like him, but I admire how savvy he was. And not just Pericles for that matter, a goodly number of Athenians must have known this as well. Pericles and Thucydides knew each other anyway, And I find it impossible to believe that they didn't talk about this sort of thing. So if war was inevitable, the best time for it to happen was when one state had the resources to defeat the other. And I'll talk about Athenian versus Spartan resources in our next lecture. But it was imperative that Athens not be seen as breaking that 30 years peace. And so no moves could be made directly against the Spartans. However, against their allies, that was a different matter. Seen in this light, Pericles' hidden agenda, an offshoot of his imperialistic policies that he's had since the 460s, that agenda now comes to light. Corcyra had a substantial navy. Pericles couldn't allow it to fall into Peloponnesian hands. The alliance with Corcyra was defensive only, true, but it would mean that the Corcyrian navy would join that of the Delian League, and it would bring the city into direct conflict with Sparta's chief ally, Corinth. The same is true of the move against Potidaea. This goading of Corinth did the trick, for the Corinthians began to protest to the Spartans that they needed to do something about these wretched Athenians. And then we've got the Megarian Decree. The economic sanctions are probably a pretext for the real reason. Megara had been a member of the Delian League, but it had switched loyalties and joined the Peloponnesian. Given Megara's strategic importance, Pericles' decree may have aimed to coerce Megara back into the Athenian alliance before war broke out. Now, there's no question that Pericles knew what effect the Megarian decree would have, because Thucydides says that it led directly to war. And Aristophanes, in his comedy The Acharnians, which was performed in 425 BC, blames the Megarian decree specifically for causing the war. In this play, the hero Dicaeopolis, who lives in a ravaged town north of Athens, makes his own separate peace with Sparta. He is disgusted and he's disillusioned by Athenian leadership, and he blames the Megarian decree and therefore Pericles for bringing the war on. Pericles then neatly exploited major Spartan allies to force Sparta into a corner, where the only recourse was to support its allies or lose them. And by supporting its allies, that meant declaring war on Athens. The Athenians then become the victims. They enter a war that was apparently not of their own making, and they enter this war to defend their way of life. We can see much of this line in the scare tactic and patriotic rhetoric of Pericles' war speech, as I call it, to the Athenian assembly. This speech that persuaded the people to reject Sparta's ultimatum over Megara. It's that speech that paints the Spartans as enemies of democracy, and he urges the people to fight for their way of life. But now we have hostilities underway, and it's time to discuss the war itself. Now, there's a lot that goes on during this war. From 431 to 404, that's a long stretch of time. And I can't look at every single thing in detail because this war is but part of our course, albeit a very important part. And our course continues until 323 BC. So if it's okay with you, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to discuss what for me are the more important events in the war and the more important aspects of it as they relate to our course and the themes in it. And as we track through this war, we'll see that the points I made at the end of lecture 25, especially about the role that the demagogues played in the war and the role of the people in the assembly, will, in my opinion at least, turn out to be true. Whether you'll agree with me is another matter, but I've said before that I'm at my happiest when people are disagreeing with me. So have a field day. I will see you in the next lecture. Thank you very much.